Thank you, Lindell. That was a beautiful meditation. And that's a beautiful poem for today, really appropriate for today. If someone asks about the mind of this monk, say that it is no more than the passage of wind in the vast sky. Today is our introduction to the eighth picture. Forget both ox and self. Now, to step back a little, this is the eighth of 10 ox herding pictures that we're going through this entire year. And I'll in a moment, I'll show you the picture and also the other pictures to give some context for this one. What we typically do during the first sit of the month, the first time we're seeing a new picture, is we have the intention to cultivate our own relationships to this picture. So if you don't already have an intention for this morning for yourself, there's an invitation to let that be your intention. This is about forming a relationship with the picture. And if you're going to be here for the following sits, there'll be more discussion, interpretation and reflection on the pictures going forward. So today we're starting with that. And with that in mind, I'm going to organize the talk into sort of, well, really two sections. I'm going to give you some time to view the picture and absorb it. And I'll just say a few words that are about the context of this picture. And I'll read the verse. And then allow for some time for things to arise. Then the next section is I'll give some of my own feelings and thoughts on the picture. And again, I think the intention is, not really to take those in as some kind of gospel, but really to I'm saying my own thoughts and feelings. In the hopes that it stimulates something in you. Some part of it may stimulate something in you. And it may be the opposite. I may say something and you might have exactly the opposite feeling, and that's wonderful too. Because the intention here is to cultivate your own relationship. So it's really just meant to stimulate whatever comes up in you. And then, of course, we'll move to the next section of this morning where we break into groups and we'll have a little bit more time to discuss this morning. To let things arise and to allow that cultivation. So I'll begin by sharing the image. Actually, I'll begin by going through the images. Can someone give me a thumbs up if they can see the 10 ox herding pictures on my great. Thank you. All right. So this year, as we've discussed before, as we're going through these 10 pictures, they're kind of divided into four categories. The first, which we went through initially, was the search for the spiritual path. So we have searching for the ox, finding the fingerprints, finally seeing a glimpse of the ox. And then the next section is the struggle. We're trying to catch the ox. We're trying to tame the ox. And slowly we move from that second section into the third, letting go. Okay. We've done battle with the spiritual path. Now things get a little bit more peaceful. We begin to let go. We begin to deepen our practice. And the last month we had the ox forgotten, the self remains. The ox itself is vanishing, and yet we still had the self. And then we come to this month. Forget both ox, forget both self and ox. What a radical transformation there is here. I'm going to describe it for those who might have any trouble seeing the image clearly. Before we had images of the ox herder, of the ox finally just the herder in his house, in his home. And all of these were worldly pictures. We were seeing pictures of the world as we know it and see it. And suddenly in this photo, it's all gone. All we have remaining is the Zen Enso image, this swoosh of one calligraphy stroke in a circle. That's all. We don't see an ox herder. We don't see an ox. We don't see scenery. We don't see the home. It's just this. It's a very radical image. And Lindell said a few words about the Enso image. I'll say just mostly repeating what she said. This image can symbolize emptiness or fullness. All things can be contained within. So in the space inside the image, the white space inside the image, it may contain everything. Or conversely, it may exclude everything. Everything might be outside of that circle. It can symbolize infinity. It can symbolize the no thing, the nothing. I'm going to give you a few moments to just keep your eyes open. The instruction here is to look on your own at this image and soften your gaze. You may look at it with Buddha eyes, where you're allowing your vision to relax into the periphery of your vision. So rather than staring intently at the center, you're letting the image be in the center of the Enso, but you're widening your field. As you do this, you can let go of the thinking mind rather than trying to formulate thoughts about this image, things to say. Just let yourself experience it and let whatever arises arise. I'll read the words. Whip, rope, person, and bull all merge in no thing. This heaven is so vast, no message can sting. How may a snowflake exist in a raging fire? Here are the footprints of the ancestors. Does anything emerge? Any feelings from the picture or the verse? Does no thing emerge? Sometimes we connect with our own memories and experiences, intentions, aspirations. Sometimes it raises questions. All right. So I'll share a few of my own feelings and thoughts as I see this. I think the first things that come to my mind, the lost things, especially when I move from the previous pictures to suddenly this radical nothing, is awe. Wow, where are we? There's some excitement. There's also fear. And if I investigate that fear, for me, it's everything disappearing. You know, what would happen if I had that kind of loss. It's the fear of complete surrender. What may happen if we completely let go? There's desire here too. There's also, this is something I want at some level. You might call it a craving. There's something of a radical spiritual experience here. And, you know, me personally, those kinds of radical experiences are things I can get entangled with. I can crave them. Some of the words that come to me. Emptiness. This idea, there's a flow in this swoosh, in this circle. We're just a flow of conditions. There's a letting go. There's no clinging. I also want to spend a moment going through the words. And in doing so, I'm going to put the image back up. Okay. Does everyone see it? Is it blocked at all? Yeah. Okay, great. Whip, rope, person, and bull all merge in no thing. So what strikes me here? All these things merge. They lose distinctions. They lose separate identities. You know, here in this picture, we've come beyond, you know, the distinction between one thing and another. The self, our own selves, and the boundaries between us and the rest of the world that we experience through our sense doors. They're gone. And what do they become when they merge? They become no thing. They become formless. The next bit. This heaven is so vast, no message can stain it. How may a snowflake exist in a raging fire? Wow. So this goes on to describe what it's like when all things are merged. There's a sense of infinity here. You know, what remains is so vast as to swallow all things within it. And, you know, this reminds me of sometimes I get a sense of how small and insignificant I am or my worries or concerns are. And, I mean, and, you know, I think of this in stages. I used to play Monopoly with my family. I guess I used to is right. I haven't played it in years. But I would get, I don't know if you all find this about Monopoly. There is no game that is more capable of stirring fierce emotions and conflict in my experience than Monopoly. I mean, you know, so I used to play this game and I would get so worked up. You know, like the dice rolls seemed unfair. You know, I never rolled a 7 when I needed a 7. They always seemed to be conspiring against me. And, you know, there's something really funny about it, right? You know, I got really worked up in these phases. I couldn't see the humor, but then, you know, every now and then I could step back and see how silly, you know, this is with just a little bit of context. This is a game. This game ends this evening and it's gone. And then, you know, and then we go back to our lives and this feels so small. And then there are bigger contexts in which we can get worked up, right? You know, I can get worked up about something in my job or in my relationships. And then, you know, we can also step back from that and see, oh, this moment of conflict or of challenge, it might feel insignificant when we sort of think about it in the context of our whole lives. And then yet another frame of reference, we can think about our lives and get worked up about death, the death of loved ones, you know. And even from that, we can step back and see how many people have lived and died over the course of history, you know, who, you know, and at this very moment on Earth, everyone is dying and being born constantly, you know, and then our own personal death and the personal, you know, the feeling of personal deaths among our community can feel small in that vastness, right? You know, another thing that comes up with this vastness idea in these phrases is physical vastness, experiences of physical vastness. I was in Glacier National Park last month, and I was walking in this space of huge mountains, you know, set apart by wide yawning valleys. And if I look down, there are dizzying distances between me and the valley below me when I'm climbing on the side of a mountain. And dizzying distances from me looking up at the peak above me. And you truly feel the smallness of yourself. And you feel your own concerns kind of dissolve. Their known insignificance, you know, that can happen when we have these experiences with vast nature. There's an Eckhart Tolle quote that I think Lauren read part of a couple of months ago. He says, "You are not in the universe. You are the universe, an intrinsic part of it. Ultimately, you are not a person, but a focal point where the universe is becoming conscious of itself. Ultimately, you're not a person, but a focal point where the universe is becoming conscious of itself." It's one of those phrases that for me, I don't fully comprehend it. I just sort of sense the vastness of it. But, you know, a little bit more about it. This process of dissolving, this heaven that's so vast, it's not even us that has done this. It is the universe doing itself. You know, that's how insignificant we are in this, right? We're just a point. We're just a point of reference for this thing happening. All right. The last bit of this. Here are the footprints of the ancestors. What comes to me in this is this idea that others have been to this place before. You know, this isn't just us who've arrived here on some fresh ground. It also connects us over not just vastness in terms of space, but in terms of time, right? There's this sense that in this picture, all moments in time are collapsed too. You know, one's own ancestors, one's lineage, they're all there. We're here. Future generations that come after us, they're all contained in this vastness. So another thing that I think of that I want to just mention when I see this picture is we've talked about all this merging, this vastness. But another thing that comes up that's written about this picture is that in it, you know, there is no clinging. Martine Batchelor observes, you know, that in this state, we let go and experience this absence of craving, of aversion. And it's interesting to me to contemplate how these two ideas come at the same time. You know, we hear all these words and, you know, when we go through Buddhism, you know, we hear vastness, merging, no self, we hear no clinging. And sometimes it can all kind of feel like it's all, oh yeah, this, that, and the other. It's all these things we always talk about. But think about, you know, why is it that merging and losing boundaries would come at the same time as no clinging? How are those two related? You know, and so there are a couple of inquiries here. One is, if there's no clinging, imagine you have no clinging at all, okay? You know, clinging requires having an identity to some extent. There is some sense of self that's wanting and craving or averting from or pushing away, right? There's something towards which we're bringing or wanting to bring, and something away from which we're pushing. When we have no clinging at all, what remains of the self? What experience of the self is still there if we don't have any clinging or aversion? It's just an inquiry. And then there's another inquiry, kind of the flip side. When we are merged, when we are the entire universe, what does it even mean to desire things and cling to things or to push other things away from us? All those things are inside the universe. All those things are inside this expanded state. What is it? What could we be craving? What could we be averted from? Yeah, so to think that merging and no clinging occur here, there's something there for us to contemplate, or at least for me. And lastly, just to put this picture again in the context of all the other pictures, right? This is the last picture in that third phase, right? We talked about the four phases that these 10 pictures can be lumped into. There's this seeking or searching for the path. There's this struggle with the path. Here we have, you know, this letting go, this deepening, right? And this is the last picture in the deepening, right? First, we had this sort of tranquil riding home. We had given up our struggle. Then we go into this state where the ox is gone, the path is gone, but we still have self. And here we've forgotten self and ox. It's the last of the letting go pictures, right? When we discussed this, at the beginning of the month, I'm pretty sure it was Lauren who described the pictures before and after this, and this picture in the middle, this picture being kind of the peak that we've ascended, right? You know, one way of thinking of, and that image really stuck with me. We're kind of climbing to the top of the mountain as we go through, and here we're at a peak. The ones before are leading up to it. But we're not done. We have to come and descend from the peak too. So I want to bring into this context a little bit of what comes afterward. This is only the eighth picture. After this is integration, we come back. Right? We're not done with the spiritual journey in this picture. Yeah. So, I want to leave you with those thoughts and spend a little bit more time today in discussion. So we'll start the discussion a little bit early. And before I go into breakout rooms and signing them, I just wanted to bring up, just as prompts for discussion, if things have come up already, if you have things to discuss, great. You can talk about those during your discussion period. If not, just a couple of prompts here. You know, what, you know, the prompts are in this merging, in this absence of boundaries between ourselves and the universe, and in this no clinging, this letting go completely, you know, how are those related? When we have no clinging, what remains of the self? When we are merged, what does it mean to cling? All right. I am going to sign the rooms. I would also say that this is a moment when, if you don't want to be a part of these groups, you can temporarily leave. You can choose to remain in the main room. You don't have to leave this discussion at all. You just don't have to enter a room. But I would encourage you, if you want to discuss this and to be part of this this group process of coming into relationship with this picture, to stay. All right, I think that may be all of us. Welcome back. So we have some time now for sharing what came up in the talks, in our conversations, any questions, anything you wanted to say in front of the group. And I'm going to put up my participant screen so I can see if anyone's using the hand wave, the hand raising. Okay, Nikhil. And then Janet. Oh, I'm sorry. Jason is first there. Jason first, then Nikhil, then Janet. So Jason?
Oh, hi. So we were talking, for me, it feels like this is kind of graduate level and I'm still in elementary school, especially the second question. We didn't even know what to do with it. It's just something that I feel we're just kind of thinking about it. And we were talking about the vastness of the universe, but things still, we are human and things still matter to us. And so how do you reconcile the human reality and our wants and needs and need to help each other with this, what sometimes feels like a detachment.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. So I want to just first say that when we got together, those of us who are teaching these Sundays, when we got together and discussed this, we had a very similar thing to say. We were like, gee, we're kind of going beyond the realm of our own experience here, toward the end of these photos, we're entering territory where, we might have ways of relating to this picture, but we don't have direct experience of, some of these stages. Or if we do, they're fleeting, right? They're glimpses. So we're right there with you, Jason. I mean, this is a lot of, this is going beyond where a lot of us have ever been. And I certainly include myself in that. And I'd say another thing, like, I think what I find helpful here is not, we talk about forming a relationship with this picture. It doesn't have to be out of direct experience. It can sometimes be, what does this make you feel? Or also to know that this is where things lead, even if you feel like, oh my goodness, this is nowhere near where I am in my life. There can be something orienting about that, to see like, oh, this is what the spiritual path is described by someone who, this is described by a 12th century Zen master. This is what they have seen as what comes ahead. This is where things lead. It can be orienting sometimes to know that, even if where we're practicing feels like something many steps before this. I at least find that kind of helpful in some way. So maybe, it's those things that we can take for this photo. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's an important point. Nikhil.
So, excuse me. I think something that had come up for me, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts on, how to kind of like work with this, was, there's on one hand, there's the kind of like the conscious realization of some of what you were talking about with this picture, with, being aware of our relative place within the universe and kind of the awareness and the spaciousness of, how we fit into like the grand scheme of things, right? And how small some of these clingings and cravings and desires are. And I think for me, sometimes I'm able to be consciously aware of this, of this perspective, but it feels like oftentimes there's challenges or there are inputs from our lives, whether I think for me in particular, it happens to be work, but the various, experiences that we go through on a daily basis that sort of pull us in the opposite direction from kind of the path and like mindfulness and stuff like that, where, I think the example for me is, with work, where there's always a push to getting things done and getting things done more quickly. And it's always about once something's done, it's always on to the next thing. And there's, it's being in an environment where there is the opposite of that perspective, where there is a huge, vast importance placed on these immediacies of what are, you know, what's the project being done, or what are these tasks that we have to get done? And how do you hold the cultivated awareness that we're working towards? How do you, when there's so many more inputs that pull us in one direction than the other, how do you try to bring that awareness to some of the realities of the existing in our society and the pulls in towards kind of like the opposite of spaciousness, in a sense, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I think, that's a great question. And I think probably we can all relate to this, right? You know, it's me with my Monopoly game. You know, I dive into these small things. I mean, you know, and work is a larger thing than Monopoly. It's something that can be, it's a large part of many of our lives. How do we work with this? In a way, things like those experiences that we have in life that challenge our practice, that feel like the opposite of our practice, are the building blocks of our practice, I think. You know, if you're meditating, it's almost, it takes getting distracted and going into thoughts for me to see the nature of what it is to be aware. You know, I get distracted and I wander off and I'll think about something that's happening during my day when I'm meditating. And it's when I kind of snap back. Oh, what was I just doing for those moments? You know, and I come back into a state of awareness. That's what causes me to realize that there is an awareness and what that feels like. And on a vaster level, I think there's an analogy to these things that we do. I mean, what you're talking about is, it's the fodder. It's why do we even seek out a path like this? It's because we have experiences like work, like this feeling of rat race, like this feeling of urgency that doesn't feel founded, but is part of our lives, right? It's kind of what gives us the impetus to move into it. So I guess, you know, there's an invitation in what I'm saying to see those things as just part of the path, you know? Yeah, okay, I feel this, I'm caught in this feeling of work where I have to do, I have to move. Yeah, I'm caught in that. And just the noticing of that is this practice. Yeah. I don't know if that helps at all, but I certainly can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Janet.
I found this picture very inspiring. And looked at it as in the center of the picture, a real peace and non-clinging and things like that. And then the circle being a protection that maybe the Dharma can offer to the other things that are making that not possible can't get in. Oh. And I really liked the picture, but I didn't find that the poem seemed to have anything to do with the picture as I saw it.
Huh. What do you make of that?
I don't know. We were talking about whether maybe a different translation would have done that or... I don't know. In most of the cases, the poem increased my understanding of the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but so, I don't want to think that my reaction to the picture is wrong because the poem doesn't correspond to it.
Well, I think that's wonderful, actually. And I think it's great that you have a different feeling here. So I actually want to understand a little better. What I heard you saying was that there's a feeling of the Dhamma protecting. So the circle mm-hmm. is maybe a circle of exclusion, which is a meaning of the Enso. It is actually connected to that symbol. wherein, you know, there is an inside and an outside, and it can be an excluding force. So it sounded like it's excluding all of the things that maybe cause suffering. Is that an accurate interpretation of what you said?
Right, but it's interesting because the picture doesn't have any of those things, it doesn't make me think about what it's excluding.
Yeah.
It's just like it allows me to believe that I could get to a space where those things weren't penetrating all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So I think my main thoughts about what you're saying is, it sounds like there's a wonderful journey involved in this month, and maybe there isn't a journey. Who knows? You'll have your interpretation of the picture. You'll see these words again and again. You'll hear other people's interpretations of the picture, and you have some grist for the mill. You have something to try and integrate or not integrate, or find out what, you know, you have a point of contrast. I think that's wonderful. I'm really curious to hear how it evolves. You know, I hope you'll share, you know, in the second or third or fourth week, if you're back with us, if it's the same or if it's different.
I may or may not be able to be live on the rest of the month because I'm going to be away. I might possibly Zoom in to do it live.
Okay. I'll just share one more thing. And also noting we have time for one more sharing really quick, but it's 11:25. So I'll be mindful of Lyndall's time too. But very quickly, one thing that kind of does tie into me to what at least I think I'm hearing you say is this idea of a heaven so vast and the fact that nothing can survive. How can a snowflake survive in this fire? You know, there is something protective and stable about this circle or about this state that comes to me when it says, how might a snowflake exist in a raging fire? This is a raging fire. This is a protector. This is stable. You know, this isn't a fragile state or a state in which all of the, you know, all of the hindrances emerge and can have their way with us. So there's something, I don't know, I feel some connection in that, but I don't know if that feels the same to you. And this is more about what you feel. But I wanted to mention that one thing.
I'll think about it over the month.
Okay. Thank you.
Let it percolate.
Yeah. 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 Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. Sean and Bruce, maybe one last thing before we move over.
I love how I feel when I look at this picture, because I look at it as an aspiration where there's just spaciousness. And I think the term of nothing and nothingness can get really mind-boggling and confusing. And looking at it, I saw that it could just be a blank sheet of paper. Nothingness, but it's not. It has that circle that goes around and that it meets. And it's like this place of non-clinging or total transparency and spaciousness is being held by something. Mm. And it just feels to me, it feels like it's being held by love, a vast love. And because they're really, I don't know that there is nothing, because there's universes and universes and universes and I don't know. Anyway, I really liked it, and it's an aspiration, and it's going to be a good month. Maybe it won't be, I don't know. But anyway, I'm looking forward to the month with this picture.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean. That is beautiful. And I think that'll stay with me, what you said about how there's not a blank picture here. There is something here. And the contemplation of that. Yeah. You're reminding me of something that Tim said when we were discussing this picture. Maybe he'll bring it up on the Mondays. I can't recall if he's teaching this month. Okay. Well, then I've seen shaking his heads. No. So in that case, maybe it's more important that I say what he was saying. He said that even in this, it's not like the self is completely gone. There is a return from this state. This picture is not enlightenment. You know? And so we've forgotten the self in a temporary kind of way here. I thought that struck me in the same way that what you're saying strikes me. There's not nothing. You know, there is still something. Yeah. Thank you. That there's a lot to contemplate in what you said.